did.
True Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program. I'm just sitting here trying to figure out what the hell to go with first. Too much. Too much stuff going on. So I guess the thing to start with here is what's happening in Iran. Although Barack Obama's speech to the AMA today is certainly worth spending some time with, which we're going to tonight. We have some sound clips from that. This would be of great interest to Dick Cheney. It's reported in Scientific American magazine, a small purple microbe that has spent the last 120,000 years in hibernation, about two miles beneath a Greenland ice sheet, has been brought back to life. We'll get to that later. I don't know, man. Iran. It was labeled, of course, part of the axis of evil by the Bush crime family, whoever wrote the line and put it in front of the half-wit. And he used the term in, I believe it was a State of the Union address, wasn't it? The Iranians had an election over the weekend, or was it last week? And, of course, they started counting the votes. Has anyone seen John Negroponte lately? And where's Karl Rove? What about John Poindexter? These rotten bastards. And I'm not just picking their names out of the air. You'll get the connection here in a moment. Not necessarily Rove. Rove is a two-bit punk who is in the mold of Lee Atwater. Let's set him aside for a second. But John Poindexter, Admiral John Poindexter, and John Negroponte, and maybe even Oliver North. I'd like to know their whereabouts, and I'll explain that to you in a second. But the pictures on television showing the Iranian people in open rebellion, there's no telling how long this is going to last or what direction it's going to take. But they honestly believed their election was stolen, just like we did back in 2000. Big difference in reaction, right? Making allowances for cultural differences, the Iranians have been cheated out of a decent form of government since 1953, when we overthrew the government of Mohammad Mossadegh, who had been elected to be the president of Iraq, prime minister, I guess, by the Iraqi parliament. And the United States and the United Kingdom didn't like that, so we immediately went to work and sent a couple of agents over and overthrew the government and installed the Shah of Iran, who immediately set up SAVAK, the Iranian secret police that would have made Saddam Hussein look like a piker when it came to torture and death and destruction. But the Shah, not being Arabic, but instead being Persian, I believe felt that he had a higher calling than just to suppress his own people. So Iran flourished if you can say that living in a dictatorship with the secret police and an imperial form of government is a means of flourishing. But the Iranian people chafed under the Shah's reign because there was no dissent. There are no political parties. Nothing was allowed. It was a purely military slash corporatist state that was supported 100% by the United States. And, in fact, 100% by the Israeli government because, the Iranians had no designs on anybody. They were perfect, or the Iranian government, they were perfectly content to live the way they were living. They had the Shah on the peacock throne that, according to the Shah of Iran, dated back how many thousands of years? Remember the big party they had back in the late 70s? Do you remember I'm not going to get into that, but they had a picture to celebrate the 2000th, or was it the 4000th birthday of the Persia? Great historical references, but of course they were all washed away in due to the fact that the Shah of Iran was a military dictator. But he was a good customer for the United States. He bought lots of military equipment and, of course, had nice deals for Iranian oil. Blah, blah, blah. Then in 79, the revolution, when the Shah came to the United States for his cancer treatments and died here. I believe he died in Miami, didn't he? But long story short, the Iranian people have been cheated out of... and then, of course, when Ayatollah Khomeini took over, then you had a theocracy. So there goes any kind of really free thought or advancement of the sciences, so on and so forth, unless it concerns something very essential like nuclear power. Khomeini died and another group took over, but the Iranian people have been stuck. And I'm saying this not as an expert on Iran by any means. There is a huge Iranian population in the Los Angeles area. And a couple of the people who listen to this program out there who are Iranian Americans, if such a word exists, have been sending me information about this. Okay. The overthrow of Mohammad Mossadegh, though I've known about for 35 years, it's just part of American history that's not taught in middle school. The fact that Obama mentioned it in his Cairo speech was just absolutely shattering to everybody, not here in this country because we have no sense of history, but to everybody else on earth, practically, in the Middle East and Europe and Asia, it was just like, oh my God, a U.S. president admits overthrowing a government. Of course, back in this country, most of us were going, huh, what'd he say? I don't know. American Idol on? So the pictures today all over television were of a people who felt cheated out of what they considered to be the expected outcome of their election. Ahmadinejad and Mir Hossein Mousavi. Mousavi is the instrument of change, not unlike Barack Obama, right? Isn't that what it was all about? The Iranian people were sick of this half-wit Ahmadinejad, who, if one wants to draw a loose comparison, on the same intellectual level, possibly as George W. Bush, although that's not a real good comparison because Bush was such a dumbass. But Ahmadinejad, what has he done? He's a little tin pot. He has no power, regardless of what Netanyahu and Bush and the rest of these clowns would tell you. Ahmadinejad has no power. The power is in the hands of the mullahs, the religious leaders. It is they are the ones who control the power. It is the Islamic Republic of Iran. It is not Persia. It is the Islamic Republic of Iran, and that first word means that power is held by the religious whipsters, the ones that crack the whip. Ahmadinejad does nothing but what he's told. So along comes Mir Hossein Mousavi. He was around before. Mousavi was the prime minister during the Khomeini government back in 79, 80, 81, 82. Mousavi has been there. He's been there, done that. Now, there's a very interesting point I want to make about this, so stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. The hour. Just a clarification, the Shah of Iran, when he developed pancreatic cancer, came to the U.S. for treatment. Jimmy Carter let him in. He did not die here. He got some treatment here, and that's what set off the revolution in 1979, because of the memories from 1953 of our involvement in the overthrow of their elected government and the installation of this dictator. So the Shah left the United States. He died in Egypt. His pancreatic cancer finally got him there. The Iranians were demanding that he be returned, even when he was sick, along with his wife, to be put on trial for probably treason, and they probably would have hanged him. And the U.S. refused to turn him over. And that resulted, one of the reasons, in the revolution in 1979. Okay? So Mir Hossein Mousavi, who is the Iranian presidential candidate of change. There's a connection between Mr. Mousavi and Michael Ledeen, the American neoconservative and Israeli operative, and Adnan Khashoggi, who is Saudi. Now, those three names, two of those, Adnan Khashoggi and Michael Ledeen, surely those of you who are keeping track, you remember that both of those names were involved in the Iran-Contra affair. Ghorbanifar, who was there's another one. Manoucher Ghorbanifar, who was an Iranian arms merchant. And it was alleged for a long time that he was a Mossad double agent, and he was a key figure in the Iran-Contra affair. That was the arms for hostages deal between Iran and the Reagan administration. But in one or two, at most three degrees of separation, these people, Michael Ledeen, Mir Hossein Mousavi, and Adnan Khashoggi, Manoucher Ghorbanifar, in addition to John Poindexter, Oliver North, and John Negroponte, this was a cabal of people who... First of all, Iran was the first country to recognize the establishment of the State of Israel. Did you know that? I believe it was Iran. The Israelis were never really all that upset with Iran, especially not under the Shah, because the Israelis knew that the Shah was a tightly held American puppet. What was to fear? What was to fear? Ghorbanifar, Michael Ledeen, and Mir Hossein Mousavi, the guy who was defeated, according, if you want to believe the lies of Ahmadinejad, the guy who was defeated the other day in Iran, they all were involved in the Iran-Contra affair. And our good friend Mir Hossein Mousavi was prime minister in the Ayatollah Khomeini government. You following me? Is this nonsense? This is from chapter one of the Walsh. Do you remember the Iran-Contra report? by Judge, what was his first name? Judge Walsh. It doesn't matter. But this was in that report. On or about November 25th, 1985, Michael Ledeen received a frantic phone call from Ghorbanifar asking him to relay a message from Mir Hussein Mousavi, the Prime Minister of Iran, to President Reagan regarding the shipment of the wrong type of Hawk missiles. Ledeen said the message essentially was, quote, "We've been holding up our part of the bargain, and here you people are now cheating us and tricking us and deceiving us, and you had better correct this situation right away," end quote. Well, the deal that was being held up was the release of the hostages. That was the first deal. Now we're in 1985, and what's his name? Mousavi is still waiting for the right kind of missiles. They wanted TOWs. What did they get? Hawks. See, they wanted more in exchange for their silence. I mean, this is crazy stuff. I've got a lot here in front of me, but I'm not going to get that far into it. I just wanted to make that connection for you that Mr. Mousavi, who is the Iranian presidential candidate who claims to have lost had the election stolen from him, and I tend to believe it. I go along with that. The pre-election polls were just staggeringly in favor of Mousavi, not Ahmadinejad. Nobody wants that crazy unshaven bastard around anymore. I realize the Iranian men unshaven, but Ahmadinejad looks like he just crawled up from under a rock, in addition to being a jerk, kind of like George W. Bush. So here's Mousavi, who actually I believe he won the election, but Mousavi is all of a sudden seen as not controllable. I mean, this is a guy who was president under the regime, or the prime minister, whatever the hell it was, under the regime of Ayatollah Khomeini. So what's the problem? Well, just like how the election in this country of 2000 was stolen, the American public will never know. The Iranians are not going to know why and how this current election was stolen. But just so you know, I just found that a little bit of intriguing history that Mousavi, the man who won the election in Iran, most people will tell you, who is now being denied his presidency, was one of the people involved in the Iran-Contra affair in this country 25 years ago. My, these are small circles, aren't they?
Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
25 before the hour. I have to admit, just utter confusion about what I've been seeing on television with the riots. And now I believe one or two people have been killed by the police in Iran. But Robert Perry, writing at consortiumnews.org, is it .org or .com? Asked the question, what if Ahmadinejad really did win? And this, you've got to consider this now. Come on. You got to consider this. As Perry says, it's fast congealing into conventional wisdom that Ahmadinejad stole re-election through fraud, and that the so-called Green Revolution of Mir Hussein Mousavi got robbed. And that so-called Green Revolution, be careful of that, was based in the country's intelligentsia and middle class. But a strong case can be made that the large turnout, which was estimated at about 85% of potential voters, was the key to a genuine landslide for Ahmadinejad, who is viewed as a friend of more traditional Iranians from the working classes and among the rural peasants. I mean, he is not hated. The intelligentsia, a lot of students, the upper middle classes in Iran, and they do exist, don't like him because he is a jerk. He is a clown on the world stage, in their opinion. Not my opinion. I do not pass judgment on this guy. But the opinion of people over whom he's been governing appearing as the front man for the mullahs, he is seen as kind of a joke. But Ken Ballen and Patrick Doherty, writing in the Washington Post op-ed, cited their findings from extensive polling across Iran about a month ago that detected roughly the same 2-to-1 margin in favor of Ahmadinejad that emerged from the vote counts. Pre-election, it's about 2-to-1 majority for Ahmadinejad. Did Mousavi have great big rallies? Yeah, he did. He certainly did. These two writers in the Washington Post op-ed also knocked down one of the central arguments that cited by analysts who are claiming that Ahmadinejad committed fraud. The argument is that Mousavi, whose ethnic background is, he is an Azeri, A-Z-E-R-I, Azeri, he surely would have won Azeri-dominated districts, which instead were recorded as going heavily for Ahmadinejad. But the two writers of the Washington Post op-ed said that their survey indicated that Azeris favored Ahmadinejad by 2-to-1 over Mousavi. So there's the 2-to-1. Now, who do you believe? And this is important. Yes, it is, on several levels. This election and the resulting chaos that's going on in Iran tonight, this is important to you. It's important to me. It's going to have a profound effect on what happens in Israel, what happens in Iraq, what happens in Syria, what happens in Russia. It's just where we live, you know. Their poll also undercut the widespread media assumption about internet-savvy youth backing Mousavi. When they did this poll, they found that only 1 in 3 Iranians, 33%, have access to the internet, and that, surprisingly, 18 to 24-year-olds comprise the strongest voting bloc for Ahmadinejad of all age groups. Nevertheless, the rush to the fraud judgment, Perry writes, among much of the U.S. media, is shaping the political realities that now confront both Washington and Tehran, also the Israelis. One of the snap media judgments has been that Ahmadinejad's theft of the election proves that hardliners in Israel and neoconservatives in the United States were right all along about the impossibility of dealing rationally with Iran, and that President Barack Obama was the big loser in this one, and that, in fact, force is the only option left to employ against Iran, you see? So Ahmadinejad stole it. And if he stole it, well then, Barack Obama turned out to be blowing a tin horn. The Israelis, the hardline Israelis, the Likudniks, are right all along. And the neocons in this country, axis of evil boys, you betcha. I get so sick, don't you, of reading something or watching something on television and then realizing that the whole thing may be a construct by people who want me to think a certain way. It's also been curious to see U.S. news organizations, Perry writes, care suddenly about legitimate elections when most of them ignored, ridiculed, or covered up evidence that Bush stole the elections in 2000 and possibly 2004 as well. Isn't that interesting? Just like the election process in the occupied territories in Palestine. Ooh, or our interest in whether or not the elections were fair in Lebanon. But our own elections? As Perry writes, when an election occurs in another country and an unpopular, by our standards, leader appears to win, an opposite set of rules apply. Anyone who doesn't immediately accept the assumption of voter fraud is naive. And every conspiracy theory is cited respectfully while contrary evidence is downplayed or ignored. For instance, the assumption about the Azeri vote that the two Washington Post op-ed writers debunked with their poll findings. The Azeris were not in favor of Mousavi, according to the pre-election polls. Remember who Mousavi is. He was, for where the United States is concerned. He was involved in the Iran-Contra affair. Where the Iranians are concerned, he was a former president during Ayatollah Khomeini's reign, right after the revolution. And what do you and I know about that? Nothing. So let's not pretend we do. And why should we pretend like our mainstream media knows anything about it either? And as Perry says, another irony here is that Iran's religious leaders have now ordered an investigation of the fraud allegations in a country not known for its democratic institutions. And you know what? That is so much more than we got in 2000 and 2004, right? Was there an investigation? No. The Republicans and our complacent, pliable, horde news media said, no. There are very few people in this country. Brad Friedman was one of them who screamed from the get-go about fraud, theft. It's been stolen. So here we are. Now, does this matter? Yeah, I think it does. I think it's important. Two things are important here. I think, first of all, what happens in Iran? I mean, what an amazing country, Persia. I mean, it is just horrifying that ancient Persia, now Iran, has had to undergo stolen elections, the imposition of a dictator, a religious a takeover, and now this. Oh, I know. Who cares? Who cares about Iran, Malloy? We got problems here. I understand. Yeah. I got problems here too, just like you do. But if you believe in the idea or the reality that all these pieces are interconnected, I mean, don't forget, Iran was the centerpiece of Bush's terror activity against the American people. Iraq, Iran, and North Korea? Oh, my God. And the Iranians now, who are striving to develop nuclear power, they say it's for peaceful uses. I think, frankly, it's for both. I think it's to provide energy for them, but also to provide nuclear weapons so that they are safer in this crazy world of mutually assured destruction than they are now. What countries resist U.S. or Russian or Chinese or any country's aggressive moves, the countries that have nuclear weapons? And if Iran has been labeled, first of all, had its revolution, or not its revolution, but its election overthrown decades ago by the United States, the installation of a dictator by the United States, the Iran-Contra affair, the trading of hostages and arms and all this, you know, what's to make the Iranians think otherwise? That if they are not armed in a nuclear sense, the United States just might. I mean, Barack Obama, sure, okay. But what happens after him? What was happening before him? What happens with the Israelis? All of a sudden, Iran is in this very vulnerable position, are they not? So they decide to develop a nuclear program, and part of that is the inclusion of nuclear weapons. You notice how North Korea is just giving the entire world the middle finger. And why are they doing that? Because there's a question as to whether or not they have nuclear weapons. If they do, we know damn good and well they'd use them. Isn't it insane? Isn't it just crazy? So all I'm saying to me, to myself, I'm saying this, and to you too, be careful how emotionally involved you get or we get in the pictures we're seeing on television. It could all be illusion.
Oliver North married Lindsay Corden Draper to little Tehran. And the Ayatollah aboard a nuclear warship. If he dies, he wants to go out in style. And there's nothing to eat that don't carry the stink of certain ways dumped in the Nile. Well, one thing is certainly true. No one here knows what to do, and I'm sick of you.
ready to make nice. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Just one other, you can find this op-ed piece by Ken Ballen and Patrick Doherty just by going to Washington Post. It's in today. The headline is "The Iranian People Speak." Just go to WashingtonPost.com and you'll find it. But just a little parting shot here. Patrick Doherty, who is one of the writers, is the deputy director of something called the New America Foundation. He is the deputy director of, the American Strategy Program at the New America Foundation. You can do a Wikipedia on New America Foundation, and you'll get some very interesting information. One of the well-known board members of the New American Foundation is political commentator Fareed Zakaria, who now has his own program on CNN, I believe, entitled GPS. Is that right? Is that Fareed Zakaria? I think so. There are Republicans on this, and there are Democrats on this board, the New America Foundation. And if you do the Wikipedia and read about the New America Foundation, I think you'll find some very interesting information. So we come back to what happened in Iran. The poll was taken May 11th to the 20th in Iran, and it consisted of over 1,000, just over 1,000 interviews across that country, had a 3.1 percentage point margin of error. The last paragraph in today's Washington Post piece by these two men says the following: allegations of fraud and electoral manipulation in Iran will serve to further isolate the country and are likely to increase its belligerence and intransigence against the outside world. Before other countries, including the United States, jump to the conclusion that the Iranian presidential elections were fraudulent, with the grave consequences such charges could bring, they should consider all independent information. The fact may simply be that the re-election of President Ahmadinejad is what the Iranian people wanted. And there's one other thing. You know, and I know, because it's a matter of public record, at least in the it's out there in the blogosphere. It's even out there in mainstream media, that the United States has been sending in teams, PSYOP teams and military teams into Iran for probably the past 5 years to do damage, create mischief, stir up the people, cause trouble, destabilize the government. This is what we are best at. These covert operations where all of a sudden a country collapses and everybody turns around and says, how did that happen? Or all of a sudden an election in, let's say Iran, appears to have been fraudulent. Why? Because U.S. media starts reporting it that way. And then all of a sudden people are in the streets. Thousands of people in the streets. Okay. Which means what? Which means that the backers of Mousavi are very pissed off with the outcome of the election. Who is feeding those people information? Where is it coming from? Who started the fraud charges? Who started the theft of an election charges? Could it have been the same people who were so silent in this country when a presidential election was stolen? Well, I'll say it again. I just wonder where John Poindexter is, and John Negroponte, and Oliver North, and Mr. Gobanifar, and Michael Ledeen, and a whole clutch of these people who 30 years ago had no problem, no problem whatsoever, in providing missiles during the Reagan years to a country that was considered at the time to have overthrown the Shah and had become a pariah country that had one goal, and that was to destroy Israel. And as an afterthought, maybe get the U.S. too. And then it turned out that at the highest levels of the Reagan administration, we were doing business with them, just like we did with Hussein, just like we've done with so many before, right? Isn't it crazy? Isn't it just, I mean, don't you sit back sometimes and say to yourself, oh, my God, is there anything left that is really as it appears to be? But we both know where it concerns the Middle East, and not that Iran is actually part of the Middle East, but it's close enough, right? Where it concerns the Middle East and the geopolitical chess game that goes on there and has been going on since the end of the Ottoman Empire, we know this. We know that nothing is what it appears to be. Nothing. That at any given time, what you and I see or some event there that has a profound effect on U.S. foreign policy and sometimes domestic policy, it's illusion. And the reason it's having such an effect is because we are being told it has an effect. Whether it does or not. Oh my. We'll be back after the break and have some sound for you from President Obama's speech to the AMA today. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Your part.
Doesn't yours? I mean, hey, welcome back. 6 and a half past the hour. This is the Malloy program. But just trying to understand some of this stuff, especially the global political chess game, which is no longer about dominating economic policy, but it's all about controlling shrinking natural resources and. Bradblog.com has an interesting piece up that pretty much lays out that the election in Iran was stolen, much the same way the election in Ohio in 2004 was stolen. By the way, Brad is going to be substituting for me all next week, Brad Friedman. So tune in and give him lots of support, okay? So if you want a different opinion from, and I didn't really express an opinion there. I'm just kind of floating out all this stuff that's out there that is counter to what the mainstream media is just pushing and pushing and pushing. You know, there is a big interest in the United States and Israel to keep Iran as an out-of-control terror state ready to do anything. So if the people of Iran really did re-elect Ahmadinejad, then it is in the interest of the U.S. and Israel to paint it as a stolen election. I mean, it just is. I'm not commenting one way or the other on that. You know, this is craziness. But I think for those of you who listen to the Hartman program, I think Tom has on several occasions commented about the New America Foundation. I think that was one of the places where the term radical middle that Hartman uses a lot was first used. And one of the authors of that op-ed piece I shared with you about the polls in Iran is part of the New America Foundation. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know anymore. I don't know. This email comes in, Mike. According to Professor Mohammed Sahimi on Tom Hartman's program this morning, what's suspicious about the election is the lack of normally expected variations between demographic groups. It seems that everybody voted for Ahmadinejad in the same proportion, which is so highly unlikely that if true, you'd have to think the election was stolen. Email comes from Golden, Colorado. Yeah, oh, I know. I mean, I do. I just, I just wonder. Don't you? Sure you do. Prairie 2 writes, the rule of thumb is that if you have a third of the population that will enthusiastically support you, it is possible to mount a revolution. The question then, is there anybody in place to take advantage of the power shift? Yeah, where is Negroponte? I don't know. It worries me. Doesn't it worry you? An event occurred in recently here that is an absolute slander against the Christian religion, and the results of this action displays an anti-Christian bias and anti-Christian bigotry and propaganda. And to a lesser extent, Islam and Judaism too, because they all kind of subscribe to the same creation theory, right? Well, this slam against Christians occurred when a small purple microbe that spent more than 120,000 years in hibernation deep beneath a Greenland ice sheet was brought back to life. Well, you see where the slam is right away. 120,000 years? Ah, stop it. Any Christian fundamentalists and a lot of Jews and Muslims would tell you that the earth is, what, maybe 7,000 years old, 6, 8, 9? But certainly not 120,000. Scientists at Penn State revived the bug in a lab by warming it in an incubator over the course of 11 months. That's according to the magazine Scientific American. It is a bacterium which was found under nearly 2 miles of ice. And when it was reawakened, it began immediately producing fresh colonies. Uh-oh. It sounds like something out of a science fiction film, a tiny purple microbe. Dormant for 120,000 years, deep beneath glacial ice, brought back to life in a science lab. Well, according to Scientific American, this microbe is harmless to humans. It is 50 times smaller than E. coli. And according to one researcher who was interviewed by the Daily Mail of the UK, it is harmless to humans. Oh, good. Okay. Scientists say that the discovery suggests that dormant life could be revived from ice particles taken from Mars sometime in the future. Another scientist told the Daily Mail, quote, these extremely cold environments are the best analogs of possible extraterrestrial habitats, end quote. Well, this kind of makes the people who poo-pooed and laughed at the folks who decided to submit to cryogenic, is that what it was called, the freezing? Remember when that was so popular? When was that, back in the 80s, 70s? People were being doused with liquid nitrogen frozen solid. Oh, my God. No, not the same thing. Not the same thing. Now, if your DNA were frozen solid for 100,000 years, maybe that could be. I'm getting over my head now because I'm not. You all are much. I've got about 50 listeners who are so much more, and a wife who are such more keyed in, way more keyed into the biology than I'll ever be. Let's move right along from slams against Christians to Sarah Palin. Yeah, I got to talk about her. You know what's been happening, I guess. You know, she went to New York, and then Letterman made some comedic remarks, some a lot of people interpret as being sleazy. Henry Rollins, writing at Vanity Fair, said that, I'm sure by now you've heard the joke that talk show host David Letterman made about her daughter. He admitted it wasn't his best moment, so he apologized on his show, and you would think that would be the end of it, but it seems that Palin and her husband, the first dude of Alaska, feels the need to keep this ball up in the air. And I agree with Henry Rollins. It's easy to feel sorry for Palin, a not very smart person who didn't realize her 15 minutes were up and kept on talking. But here's the thing about all this crap about David Letterman. It was Palin who took her pregnant daughter out on stages all over America and at no point acknowledged the overwhelming hypocrisy of her words and actions. Here's somebody who presented herself, didn't she? As a Republican, as a Christian, as a moralist. And, you know, she drags her pregnant unmarried daughter around. Now, to those of us on the left, so what? Yawn. You know, the young woman got pregnant. Whether or not she had a marriage partner is really, truly kind of beside the point. Unless you're subscribed to the belief that sex outside of marriage or marriage between two of the people of the same sex or whatever that right-wing hog snot is, then parading your unmarried pregnant daughter is a little hypocritical, isn't it? I think so. As Henry Rollins writes to Sarah Palin, you're now a grandmother and your daughter has never married. All of the Palin's dingbat yammerings in the last few days over Letterman's throwaway remarks, which were featherweight in comparison to the Molotov cocktails that Limbaugh and Beck and Hannity and the rest of these rat bastards throw with predictability. But all their whining and bleating and bitching are showing this pair to be small town hickoids who can't get over the fact that David Letterman mentioned them on his show. Rollins says, I was amazed at just how ill-equipped she was, not only for the job of vice president, but for governor, mayor, and guardian of her daughter's virginity. And then Rollins writes, you know, you right-wingers are a strange bunch. Has President Obama come for your guns yet? No? What are you going to do with all those extra bullets? Got any tea bags left? When's the next party?
Yeah!
American woman! Sit kettle. So what I say, but when I'm hanging around my door, don't want to see your face no more. I don't need your war machines. I don't need your ghetto scenes. Colored lights can hypnotize, sparkle someone else's eyes. Now, woman, get away from me. American woman, mama, let me be.
No more Mr. Nice Guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
One last thing on the Letterman-Palin nonsense. And it's another example of the utter uselessness of the Republican Party. There is a New York State Assemblyman named Brian Kolb, who is a Republican. He set up a website and is demanding that CBS fire David Letterman. That'll happen. This guy obviously has way too much time on his hands, but since he's a New York State Assemblyman, that's certainly understandable. There's even a website. What is it? Where's the website? FireDavidLetterman.com. There you go. It's just astonishing. Wouldn't you know, a Republican, and he says, either at the website or he's, a letter to CBS chief Les Moonves, this freak said, firing Mr. Letterman would send a clear message that CBS will not tolerate any of its employees, even established media figure like Mr. Letterman, making demeaning and degrading comments about women. This is from a Republican state assemblyman in New York. Oh, my God. Ah! Okay. Glenn writes, Mike, posted this on your comments blog, but since it was relevant to tonight's show, I thought I'd forward to you by email, too. It's in reference to what I wrote today on my blog site at MikeMalloy.com. Glenn writes, here's some more information about the worst of the worst that were, you know, the people, they were identified that way by Dick Cheney. Those were he said that, what, about a year ago, 8 months ago, before the election, and, you know, trying to terrorize Americans again, still, forever. The worst of the worst referred to the people still left in detention at Guantanamo. And what I blogged about today was an article in the New York Times also today about three of these detainees, or four, who were released to Bermuda. And what they're doing now, they were Uyghurs, ethnic and nationalist group from Western China that we had we bought from Pakistan tribesmen who said, here are terrorists. And the four turned out to be Chinese nationals who the government of China has labeled terrorists, you know, people fighting for their own freedom. And so we held them for 7 years in Guantanamo, a year of which was in solitary confinement. And during that time, we allowed Chinese interrogators to come over and do God only knows what to these people. Finally, a court ordered their release a few months ago, and now they have been released. But since you and I just wet our pants if a terrorist or a detainee or somebody having been held in one of our torture camps is released in America or jailed in America, oh, we're just so delicate, we in this country. So Governor of Bermuda, without consulting the U.K., now the U.K. is all pissed off, but the Governor of Bermuda said, yeah, we'll take them. So what's been going on? They've been swimming in the ocean. They've been having coffee and crumpets or whatever the hell they eat in Bermuda. And go to the New York Times today. You'll see it. But anyway, Glenn writes, curiously enough, the UK has not imploded with the release of nine of these so-called worst of the worst that were UK nationals. Nine of them have been released and sent to either the UK or Spain. And as Glenn writes, curiously enough, the UK has not imploded in racist riots. It's not been decimated by dirty bombs or had buildings spontaneously collapse into their own footprint since they came back. If these really are representatives of the worst of the worst, we don't really have that much to be worried about. Let's go about our business and reflect that one is far, far more likely to drown in one's own bathtub than fall prey to terrorist murder. So let's begin the war on bathtubs at once. And Roy writes about the Iranian situation. We're about to break. I'll share it with you when we come back. And also, a Republican activist in South Carolina has compared Michelle Obama to a gorilla. As a matter of fact, has said that the gorilla is probably one of her ancestors, a white man in South Carolina, and you ought to see a picture of him. Jesus H. Christ, if I'm related to this guy genetically or racially or anything, during this break, I'm going to kill myself. You know, your typical lard-ass-looking, 80% bald, smiley, big-nosed, bulbous nose from too many years of drinking white guy. Next to him is a picture of beautiful, gorgeous Michelle Obama. And this Republican white turd from South Carolina suggests that, well, I'll tell you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
is the outrage. Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Okay, this is from Roy. Mike, what is happening in Iran is exactly what happened in Venezuela. I was in Caracas just before the referendum vote, and the wealthy student protesters were across the street from the metro station. I stood watching them for a while. I noticed three gringos stood in the back who seemed to be orchestrating the protest. I walked across the street, walked up to them, and asked in English, "Hey, where's the metro station, mate?" The guy said, "Down the street." I said to him, "American? I'm British." He said, "Yep." And then I said, "CIA, NSA, or what?" He put his head down and walked away. But after the Chavez vote win, the media here claimed stolen election, etc., just like what they're doing with Iran and did with Bolivia, Ecuador, and any other country the U.S. neocons don't like. Roy. Yeah, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. So, I just have to wonder. Because when I see pictures like that, like the young people at Tiananmen Square 20 years ago, and pictures of Iranian students, and pictures of people from the nation of Georgia, appearing to demand their freedom, it's difficult to look at pictures like that and question and say, wait. It's maddening, isn't it? Prominent South Carolina Republican was caught comparing First Lady Michelle Obama to an escaped gorilla. Jesus, God. He had a report posted to his Facebook account about a gorilla escaping from the zoo in Columbia, South Carolina, Friday. And GOP activists over there in that godforsaken state, his name is Rusty DePass, DePASS, wrote, "I'm sure it's just one of Michelle's ancestors, probably harmless." Yeah. South Carolina political blogger Will Folks busted this cretinous son of a bitch on Will's Fit News blog. And then the Republican told WIS Television in Columbia, quote, "I am as sorry as I can be if I offended anyone. The comment was clearly in jest," end quote. Now, let's see. Sarah Palin trots her pregnant daughter out and says, "No, she's not married." And Letterman makes a joke. Michelle Obama, who is doing nothing except being a gracious first lady, is compared by some knuckle-dragging white man in South Carolina as being related to a gorilla. And this rat bastard says, "Oh, it was clearly in jest." And then he added this, "Well, the comment was hers, not mine." He claimed that Michelle Obama made a recent remark about humans descending from apes. And the Daily News in the New York Daily News did quick LexisNexis search and could find no such comment, period. She never said it. But as the blogger there, Folks, Will Folks, says, humor like this is nothing new for South Carolina Republicans. And the mayor of Columbia, who's a Democrat, called on this jackass to apologize properly. The mayor said the comment is reprehensible. There's nothing funny about it. What he needs to do is simply apologize in a straightforward manner. The guy who made the comment is the former chairman of the Richland County Republican Party, who was an early backer of George W. Bush and co-chair of Rudy Giuliani's 2000 campaign in the county, which is the state's largest. And in 2007, this filthy bastard wrote in an op-ed endorsing Giuliani the following sentence. Listen to this, quote, "Most of us, of course, particularly in South Carolina, never give a damn about New Yorkers, but somehow the attacks of September 11, 2001 made those people Americans again," end quote. there's some evil sons of bitches running around this country, and 99.9% of them are white, 100% of them are Republican, and about 90% of them are male. And it's just, I don't know, man. The current chairman of the Richland County Republicans said this guy DePass should get a pass. The current chairman, Eric Davis, said, "You know what? Everyone says stupid things they regret later. I think the world should move on." Jesus God. DePass, you know, being a white Southern, well, South Carolina male, I'm sure he's a Christian and attends a fundamentalist church where they snot and snort and raise their hands up in the air. But he, you know, I don't know, is he like racist humor? He doesn't think too highly of evolution either. You can tell a lot about a person, can't you, by when they issue an apology following some asinine statement. This "I'm sorry if I offended anyone" line is a classic refrain for those who think they've done nothing wrong. And this moron might think it's funny to compare black people to gorillas, while he exempts himself from that same, you know, that would require evolution, wouldn't it, you dumb bastard? And you no more believe in evolution than you believe in elves and fairies. Freakish. You ought to see his picture. You ought to see his picture of this guy. Oh, my God. Grinning freak. But see, you know, he subscribes to a belief system that says evolution is some liberal plot to destroy America and to re-crucify our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and all this other crap. And yet he can turn right around and use a statement that would have some basis in evolutionary theory and link it in a racist way to the First Lady of the United States. Why doesn't somebody get a hold of this guy and waterboard him? Huh? I think that would be a good idea. Just waterboard this lard-ass bastard. I mean, this just goes on and on and on. We got time for this. Do you want to hear some more right-wing terror? Remember the report from the Department of Homeland Security about right-wing terrorism in this country? Huh? Then we have a doctor murdered in church. Then we have another one of these filthy bastards invade the Holocaust Memorial Museum and commit murder. How about this? Leader of the Minuteman American Defense Group in Arizona is in jail following his arrest on suspicion of the murders of two people, one of whom was 8 years old. A dad, 29, a little girl, 8 years old, during a home invasion. According to NBC News 4 in Arizona, quote, three people have been arrested in connection with last month's deadly double homicide in Aravaca that left a 9-year-old and her father dead. One of the people arrested for the homicide is the National Executive Director of the Minuteman American Defense Group, the group known for patrolling the border and who is dedicated to, quote, defending America's borders, according to their website. Jason Eugene Bush, 38, Shauna Ford, 42, and Albert Robert Gaxiola, 43, were all taken into custody and charged in connection with the murders of 29-year-old Raul Flores and his 8-year-old daughter, Bresenia Flores. Both were killed during the home invasion. According to authorities, these three broke into the home of the Flores family just after midnight on May 30th. At the time, the mother, the father, and the daughter were home. The invaders reportedly shot the three members of the Flores family, killing the father, Raul, and the daughter, Bresenia. The invaders then left the scene. The NBC affiliate goes on to say that the family's mother survived the attack and even fired back when the assailants returned. The sheriff's department there issued a statement saying, Sheriff Clarence Dupnik says, quote, to just kill a 9-year-old girl because she could be a potential witness to me is one of the most despicable acts I've ever heard of, end quote. The this group, their website places this group of thugs as actively involved in the tea parties, the right-wing tea parties. See, here you go again. The group also takes space on its front page to equate the rallying themes which drove the Confederate States to revolt, leading to the Civil War, with today's 10th Amendment protesters. These are some sick son of a bitches. This is right-wing terrorism, domestic terrorism, that is just rampant in the good old United States of America, huh? You filthy bastards. Boy, I wish somebody would home invade me. I just got a new rifle over the weekend. Kathy was all pissed off, but she calmed down a little bit then. But I swear to God, we'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
You hold the key to love and fear, all in your trembling hand. Just one key unlocks them both. It's there at your
so you don't have to. It's more Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. So these three terrorists, right-wing Christian terrorists, who murdered the man and his 9-year-old daughter, according to the Associated Press, they dressed as law enforcement officers and forced their way into these this family's home, about 10 miles north of the Mexican border. According to the sheriff, there was anticipation that there would be a considerable amount of cash inside the house, as well as the possibility of drugs. See, these are good Christian border guarders. They want drugs and money, so they assume this guy had both. And the woman, again, Shauna Ford, is the leader of Minutemen across Minutemen American Defense. And the other guy, Jason Bush, 34, goes by the nickname Gunny, and is the organization's operations director. She is from Everett, Washington, and she was once associated with the better-known and larger Minuteman Civil Defense Corps, but they ran her ass out. They said she was too crazy even for them. Back to the murder that they committed, these three, according to the sheriff... We had a press conference in Tucson on Friday. The sheriff said the three planned to leave no one alive. And he said that the woman, Shauna Ford, was the ringleader. The sheriff said, quote, this was a planned home invasion where the plan was to kill all the people inside the trailer so there would be no witnesses. So they got two of them. They got the 9-year-old and her daddy and the mom. The mom survived. Shauna Ford, says here, is well-known in the anti-illegal immigration community. That's according to the director of the Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism at California State University. A guy named Brian Levin. Levin says, quote, she's someone who even within the anti-immigration movement has been labeled as unstable. She was basically forced out of another anti-immigrant group, the Minuteman Civil Defense Corps, and then founded her own organization. Jesus. Yeah, right-wing terrorism is just rampant in this country. And I'll tell you who's mostly responsible for this murder is who didn't pull the trigger. I would suggest it would be Lou Dobbs, who has been dumping his anti-immigrant screed on Mexican-Americans for the past, 2 years? Without let-up. And when you look at this well-fed pig on CNN, Lou Dobbs, every time he brings up this topic, the sneers and the condescending attitude, I wonder what it's like for his wife, who is Mexican-American, whose parents were immigrants from Mexico. I'm sure they were very legal. And who, it's my understanding, Lou Dobbs' daughter is, rides in the equestrian events. And equestrian events in this country, for some reason, so I read, or those events are well known as providing work for all sorts of illegal immigrants. I wonder, from Mexico, I wonder if Lou Dobbs, in his condemnation of people to the point where white people go out and shoot immigrants, invade their houses and murder their daughters, I wonder if that bothers people like Lou Dobbs. I wonder if Glenn Beck or Rush Limbaugh or Neil Bortz or Sean Hannity or the rest of this filth, do you suppose they ever feel any responsibility? I'm not talking about their public statements. Their public statements, no. Just like that nasty ass O'Reilly who promoted the murder of the doctor in Kansas for what, the past 5 years. I mean, O'Reilly was without let up to get this doctor killed. And then O'Reilly, no. Neil Bortz pumps his poison out every day on what, 70 radio stations, 80 radio stations without let up against poor people and black folk and immigrants and just anyone. Because Neil Bortz is another rich, corpulent white guy who couldn't care less about anyone other than himself. Every one of these people are just toxic. They suffer from toxic narcissism. They pump this poison out, and then when somebody picks up a gun and kills a 9-year-old little girl or kills a doctor or kills a security guard, you know, these teabagging sons of bitches all sit back on their large, round asses and just, no, me? No, not me. No, I didn't have anything to do with that. No. Man. Don't you get tired of it? Huh? Seriously, don't you? I'm sure you do. Got something here from Prairie 2, but I don't think we have time to do it right now. We'll do it when we come back after the break. And then President Barack Obama speaking to the AMA today. I still think he's doing rope-a-dope with the have you seen the commercials against this option of single-payer health insurance that Obama wants to put out there, government-sponsored health insurance as a means of competition? Have you watched these people on these commercials who are just, I don't know, being a parent, after watching these guys in this commercial, I want to show up on the set with a huge roll of bathroom tissue and say, do you boys need help? Because it sure looked like you were just dumping all over in your pants. I've got a 5-year-old at home, and I can remember when she was 2 and used to do that. And you guys look like that as you stand there and talk about government going to get in the way of you and your health care. You sick, sick bastards. Stick around, I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. We have an email here from Heather, who writes regarding the Letterman and National Organization for Women and Sarah Palin. Apparently now has gotten or made a comment about this, which, you know, okay. Heather writes, I remember that the National Organization for Women, it's not of women, Heather, it's for women, the National Organization for Women jumped on this bash Letterman wagon and went to their website, Heather did, to send them a letter of shame. Apparently, they were not only supporting the faux outrage, but they have, quote, relaunched their media hall of shame, end quote, with Letterman's deal right there at the top. When you click on that announcement, you can go to their website, now.org. Heather writes, when you go there, they allow you to vote how bad Letterman's behavior is on their misogyny meter at the end of the piece on it. Could you please let your audience know about this nonsense to urge them to go to now.org in hordes and vote the lowest allowed? I'd appreciate it. Gotta go and send off that letter of shame to now, Heather. You know, I tend to actually want to stay out of arguments with various feminists. I learned that from hanging out all these years with Kathy. It's just safer for me as a male. And I never really felt that way. I used to jump in with both feet, you know, into an argument, say between women, one being a feminist and the other one being more of a feminist or whatever the situation was. Cause so-called feminists are the only people, women I've known for, oh my God, the past 35 or 40 years. The last person I was married to said, before I met Kathy, I remember reading, the female eunuch all those years ago, dear God, it was almost, 39 years ago, the female eunuch, Germaine Greer's book. And it was the title that got me. What? Female? Wait a minute. What's this about? And it was fascinating. I think that was the first, I don't mean to make this sound the way it's going to sound, but intellectual approach on a certain level. Germaine Greer, the Australian woman who just, you know, talked about the absolute need to emancipate women from all the stereotypes and all the gender roles and so on and so forth. And anyway, I used to, it took me about a week to read that book because I read it slowly, and I can remember my wife at the time saying, well, what are you reading? What is that? And I said, well, here, take a look. And she read the first chapter and gave it back to me and said, this is nonsense. You know who that was, right? Kathy sitting there nodding her head with that grin on her face. That was a long time. That was almost 40 years ago. Dear God, that was what, 1970? Yeah, 1970. So anyway, I tend to stay out of it, Heather, when in what National Organization for Women is trying to do, you know, with this comment by Letterman. I understand it's kind of like the Anti-Defamation League or the Southern Poverty Law Center or any of these organizations that are on the lookout for spurious, slanderous, nasty, ugly, hate-filled remarks. And I don't know any longer if the remark made by David Letterman qualifies for that kind of a designation. It was Sarah Palin who seemed to be extremely proud that her underage daughter was having sex in Alaska and got pregnant. I mean, I don't know. I really don't. I really don't. I give up. All right, Prairie 2, and then we're going to do Barack Obama. Prairie 2's missive tonight, the autopsy was conclusive, he writes. The Sunday news shows were all nattering on about Obama's attempts at health care reform. The Republicans were right there with their same tired talking points. Do you want some bureaucrat deciding your health care? If you have ever dealt with an insurance company, you quickly realize that is exactly who is running your health care. And it's not a government bureaucrat, but a functionary in India whose only goal is to keep you from getting any health care whatsoever, and they're really good at it. If you do manage to get past them and get taken care of, they won't pay for it. Even if they do, quote, authorize, end quote, treatment, the for-profit insurance company will use every underhanded trick possible to make you pay the bill and not them. 62% of U.S. bankruptcies are from people with overwhelming medical bills. 62%. And 75% of those had health insurance. It is also a given that you will lose coverage and not be able to get any, even if you can afford the $1,400-month premium and $10,000 deductible. 55 million Americans have no insurance, and probably another 150 million only think they are covered, but will find themselves in bankruptcy if they ever need it. There's also a pretty good chance that the insurance company will have killed you in the processes, and your family will be bankrupt after you're gone. The right-wingers, of course, will defend this all as free market or freedom of choice. It's freedom to die a painful and unnecessary death, leaving your family destitute to repeat the cycle. And having lost the family wealth, their situation will be all the worse. There should be a checkbox on the coroner's report. The cause of death was the insurance company. Prairie 2. Yeah, isn't that the truth? Go to his website, prairienumeral2.com, and tell him howdy from Malloy. Yeah, the commercials that are being run now and the comments that are being made, it is just, I mean, it's unbelievable. The right-wingers are trying to tell America that a bureaucrat will decide whether or not you get a surgery. A government functionary will decide whether or not you get a heart transplant. What was it Limbaugh said the other day, that the problem with the healthcare industry is all the healthy people? Isn't that what he said, Kathy? That all the people who go to fitness clubs and who run or who swim or who play tennis, you know, they're always getting injured. They're hurting their wrists and their ankles and pulling a muscle and stubbing a toe and getting hit in the eye with a ball. And they're the ones going to physicians and emergency rooms, driving up the cost of medical coverage, that people should be like him. Yeah, people should be like you, right, Rush? Huh? Okay. Oh, my God. So anyway, Obama, being Obama, you know, went right into the lion's den today. The American Medical Association, which represents what percentage of doctors are members of that organization? 30%, 35, 20? I don't even know. Maybe somebody will send me an email about that. I didn't research that today. But I know that the majority of doctors are not members of the AMA. The AMA is a right-wing organization that will do anything that it can, include funding lying commercials to stop healthcare reform. And what is the Obama administration trying to do here? What is the Obama plan? It's simple choice. No, I don't care for it. I think it's a halfway procedure, but I don't care. You know, I really don't. To see somebody make an effort, finally, a leader of the country say, okay, here's what we're going to do. You like your health insurance? Keep it. Keep it. But over here, if you don't like it or you feel you can't afford what you've got, we are going to offer government-funded health care, just like Medicare. And what's the newest argument that I heard today? Oh, well, Medicare only pays 80%. God damn, what about that? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
with the truth. It's More Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Okay. President Obama speaking to the AMA convention today. In this first cut, he explains how his health care reform will cost less than it does now. And, you know, the current system is, what, wrecking our economy, right?
Today, we are spending over $2 trillion a year on health care. Almost 50% more per person than the next most costly nation. And yet, as I think many of you are aware, for all of this spending, more of our citizens are uninsured, the quality of our care is often lower, and we aren't any healthier. In fact, citizens in some countries that spend substantially less than we do are actually living longer than we do. Make no mistake, the cost of our health care is a threat to our economy. It's an escalating burden on our families and businesses. It's a ticking time bomb for the federal budget. And it is unsustainable for the United States of America.
You know, the ticking time bomb for the federal budget, that's the reason that all right-wingers, even if it would benefit them, are opposed to this. The right-wingers in Congress have nothing to worry about. Their insurance is paid for by you and by me. And it's lifetime. And it's perfect. And it is government-funded. So, you know, when people like John Kyle and Grassley and the rest of these right-wing sons of bitches try to tell you, no, you don't want this. You don't want health insurance. You don't want government-sponsored. You don't want a bureaucrat. Obama then gave further details about what will happen if we do not act and fix our broken health care system.
If we do not fix our health care system, America may go the way of GM. Paying more, getting less, and going broke. When it comes to the cost of our health care, then, the status quo is unsustainable.
I wonder why they were applauding.
So reform is not a luxury, it is a necessity. And when I hear people say, well, why are you taking this on right now? You've got all these other problems. I keep on reminding people I'd love to be able to defer these issues, but we can't. I know there's been much discussion about what reform would cost, and rightly so. This is a test of whether we, Democrats and Republicans alike, are serious about holding the line on new spending and restoring fiscal discipline.
But they never have been, Mr. President, the Republicans. They've never been serious about that. Take a look at their Saint Reagan. Take a look at the spending that occurred from the time of the creation of this republic up until the Reagan administration. The country had managed to stay under $1 trillion in debt. By the time Reagan left office, we were nearly $4 trillion in debt. And yet Mr. Reagan is considered to be the sine qua non of the Republican fiscally responsible cadre. Mr. Reagan. But I think Obama understands one thing. He's still trying to reach across the aisle so that one of these son of a bitches can bite his hand off. He's still trying when he says this is a test of whether we, Democrats and Republicans alike, are serious about holding a line on new spending. Mr. President, they are not. They never have been. That's a trick. Don't pretend like it's a trick you don't understand. You know what these rat bastards are about. You know that that's all rhetoric for the poor, miserable voters back home who will reelect these sons of bitches no matter how much of a vote against their own economic self-interest sending them back really means. because in sending them back, they know that eventually they'll have a constitutional amendment about marriage is between a man and a woman. They'll have a constitutional amendment about what else? Something, anything about gays. Gays will never get married. They'll have a Second Amendment called the 2A Amendment. They'll have the First Amendment, Second Amendment, the 2A Amendment, which reaffirms the Second Amendment. What else? Oh my God. And while they're waiting for, oh, that's right. And every third Thursday will be National Bible Day, every third Thursday of the month. So everybody could stop, no matter where they are, come to a dead standstill and take out their Bibles and read. And until that is given to these freaks, they will continue to send these guys back again and again and again. And they're no more capable of governing than they're capable of telling the truth. We'll be back with more from Barack Obama. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
A sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by. And when two lovers woo,
26 before the hour. All right, back to Obama speaking at the AMA convention today in Chicago. After mentioning to them that we are in a bind in terms of how much we spend and what we get for the return, he goes on then to talk about the danger of inaction, not doing anything, and why it is imperative to fix the system now.
If we fail to act, one out of every $5 we earn will be spent on health care within a decade. And in 30 years, it will be about one out of every three, a trend that will mean lost jobs, lower take-home pay, shuttered businesses, and a lower standard of living for all Americans. And if we fail to act, federal spending on Medicaid and Medicare will grow over the coming decades by an amount almost equal to the amount our government currently spends on our nation's defense. It will, in fact, eventually grow larger than what our government spends on anything else today.
Mm.
It's a scenario that will swamp our federal and state budgets and impose a vicious choice of either unprecedented tax hikes or overwhelming deficits or drastic cuts in our federal and state budgets. So to say it as plainly as I can, health care is the single most important thing we can do for America's long-term fiscal health. That is a fact. That's a fact.
And it is a fact. And I understand why the right-wingers refuse to see it as a fact, because what the right-wingers are trying to do is bankrupt the country. I mean, seriously bankrupt it. They've stolen about all they can steal. We are in debt up to our eyeballs. But to go ahead and absolutely bankrupt us, because then they'll have the kind of society that they want, which is unbridled, unrestrained capitalism, which is goes by another name. It's called feudalism. Or in this country in the early years, it was called slavery. That's what these sons of bitches want. He also said if we fail to act, premiums will climb higher, benefits will erode further, the rolls of the uninsured will swell to include millions more Americans, and he addressed it right to the doctors. He said, all of which will affect your practice. Yeah. Now, How the right-wingers, he addresses here, how the right-wingers have used fear tactics and warnings of socialized medicine to scare us from these reforms. Scary because their big pharma and big insurance lobbyist backers wouldn't like it.
Now the question is, how do we finish the job? How do we permanently bring down costs and make quality, affordable health care available to every single American? That's what I've come to talk about today. We know the moment is right for health care reform. We know this is a historic opportunity we've never seen before and may not see again. But we also know that there are those who will try and scuttle this opportunity no matter what.
Uh-huh.
Who will use the same scare tactics and fear-mongering that's worked in the past.
Uh-huh.
Who will give warnings about socialized medicine and government takeovers, long lines and rationed care, decisions made by bureaucrats and not doctors.
Right.
We have heard this all before. And because these fear tactics have worked, things have kept getting worse.
Hello.
So let me begin by saying this to you and to the American people. I know that there are millions of Americans who are content with their health care coverage. They like their plan, and most importantly, they value their relationship with their doctor. They trust you. And that means that no matter how we reform health care, we will keep this promise to the American people. If you like your doctor, you will be able to keep your doctor, period. If you like your health care plan, you will be able to keep your health care plan, period. No one will take it away, no matter what. My view is that healthcare reform should be guided by a simple principle. Fix what's broken and build on what works. And that's what we intend to do.
Well, yes, but come on, Mr. President. Any right-winger out there in media land will tell their brain-dead audience that this is all a trick. You say these things, but you don't mean them. It's all a trick. Socialized medicine is coming. And then you have to stand in line for 6 hours to get 2 aspirin. It's coming. Son of a bitch. Don't anybody listen to this madman. Right? This is what they do. Now, Obama then goes on to shoot down the neocon lie that his health care plan is some kind of government socialized medicine. He has to keep doing this over and over. Anyone who tries to reform healthcare in this country has got to keep saying it over and over.
Let me also address a illegitimate concern that's being put forward by those who are claiming that a public option is somehow a Trojan horse for a single-payer system. Now, I'll be honest. There are countries where a single-payer system works pretty well. But I believe, and I've taken some flack from members of my own party for this belief, that it's important for our reform efforts to build on our traditions here in the United States. So, when you hear the naysayers claim that I'm trying to bring about government-run health care, know this, they're not telling the truth.
That means they're lying sons of bitches. The reality is, now Obama is slick. He says here, when you hear the naysayers claim I'm trying to bring about some government-run health care, they're not telling the truth. That's true. That's true. And he says that I'm not really interested, I can't be, in a single-payer system that works for some countries but wouldn't work here. It's very hard to stay even with Barack Obama in this very challenging verbal race that he's got going on here. I mean, we are so used to being lied to. We're so used to being conned. And Obama has said some things that just seem absolutely counter to what was promised during the campaign. But then I have to stop and remind myself, wait a second, Malloy. He didn't say specifically blank, 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 blank. You filled in the blanks, my man. And then I have to be honest and say, well, that's true. Yeah, I filled in the blanks. I heard something and may have changed it into something that was more in keeping with what I believe. But you're right, other Mike. Barack Obama never said those things. So if you are shocked and chagrined right now, Brother Mike, it's because you allowed yourself to be shocked and chagrined. You were so wanting a change from the neocons that were running the country. All right. All that aside, the first step in single payer truly is to say, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have we're going to have health insurance subsidized by the government, or however you want to say it. It's going to be, I mean, what do you call Medicare? What do you call Medicaid? What do you call these programs? Let's call them healthcare subsidized by the government. And as he says, you know, it can't go on. Medicare and Medicaid, if it continues to go on with the kind of outflow that is required now, it's going to hit a brick wall and then the whole thing collapses. So what's the solution? Huh? The solution, he says it. Build on the things that work. Huh? We'll see. Finally, Obama puts to rest the lie that health care reform would be too expensive.
Even if we accept all of the economic and moral reasons for providing affordable coverage to all Americans, there's no denying that expanding coverage will come at a cost, at least in the short run. But it is a cost that will not, I repeat, will not add to our deficits. I've set down a rule for my staff, for my team, and I've said this to Congress. Health care reform must be and will be deficit neutral in the next decade. Now, there are already voices saying the numbers don't add up. They're wrong. Here's why. Making health care affordable for all Americans will cost somewhere on the order of $1 trillion over the next 10 years. That's real money, even in Washington. But remember, that's less than we are projected to have spent on the war in Iraq. And also remember, failing to reform our health care system in a way that genuinely reduces cost growth will cost us trillions of dollars more in lost economic growth and lower wages.
Yes, it will. So, you know, I'm sure you probably feel the same way. I'm going to be paying very close attention to the discussion, the debate, the lies and the propaganda put out there by the right-wing crazy people in this country, as this president seems to want to move us away from the failing system we have now into something that would fail. We'll see, won't we? Where we don't belong. Because I'm never gonna be enough space. So we can be. Before the hour on the Malloy program. Well, talk about being all over the place this evening. What did we forget? Let's see. What do we leave out? Oh, that's right. Phone calls. We'll do it tomorrow night. Just a program note. We will be here tomorrow night, Wednesday night, and Thursday night live. Friday night is a redo, a rebroadcast of one of the programs. And then all next week, Brad Friedman of bradblog.com will be substituting for me. Dave writes in, Mike, earlier today I saw a comment from Juan Cole. You know who he is. Professor of Mideast Studies, University of Michigan. Yada, yada. In the Post, I read he thought that the quickness of the vote tally in Iran brought the vote result into question. In Iran, they vote by paper ballot, and the results typically take 3 days or so. So with a large turnout, the youthful voters, and the quickness of the result, he thought the outcome was at best questionable. I probably do too. The point I was trying to make at the beginning of the program is the confusion that I think anyone would feel. Iran is a flashpoint right now. What Iran does regarding its nuclear program will determine what the United States does vis-a-vis its attitude, not just toward Iran, but its whole Middle East policy. What Iran does vis-a-vis its nuclear program will determine what the new government in Israel, the government of Netanyahu again, will do. What Iran does with its nuclear program will also determine responses from Russia, since it is the Russians who have provided much of the technology and much of the engineering assistance to get these reactors built, or the centrifuges built. So the outcome of the Iranian election, depending on where you are in relation to all this intrigue in the Middle East, the outcome of the Iranian election determines your point of view, or your point of view determines the outcome, or whatever. But we have perverted the Iranian political system for the past 60, 70 years. We have, since before Iran was Iran, we have been involved in the Iranian political system in a very intimate way. If politics were sex, you could say that at one time we were having an affair with Iran. So the involvement is so complex and so interwoven. Plus is the truth that we have been sending covert operatives into Iran for the past 5 years at least in the current dust up. And who knows what the instructions were to those operatives? Blow things up? Probably. Destabilize the government? Most assuredly. Influence the political outcome of whatever happens in the country? Certainly. Tamper with their election? Oh yeah, absolutely. And on and on and on. So I'm not suggesting by any means that the election was what the results seem to indicate. I'm also not suggesting that the election was stolen or not stolen. I don't know. And I think anyone who claims they do know outside of the operatives in our government, the Israeli government, and the Iranian government, anyone else is out of the loop. I think insiders in those three enterprises understand what happened. I think the Iranians certainly do, the ones in power. I think the American covert operatives certainly do. And I think the Israeli agencies who are charged with knowing what goes on in Iran, I think they certainly do. I don't think CNN does. I don't think the New York Times does. I don't think we do. And I question whether or not the people in Iran who are struggling here with what they believe is a stolen election, I wonder if they know. That's how bad it is. That's how corrupt everything has become. Which is not a statement to, you know, make folks go commit some kind of soul suicide or political. Say, oh, it's all blah, blah, blah. No, not at all. The realization that everything is corrupt to me is impetus to fight like a son of a bitch, because corruption is corruption. It's vile. It's what we've been living under in this country for certainly the last 8 years, and you can make an argument for the previous, oh, I don't know what, 150, 200? But certainly the last eight, most assuredly the past 100. So, you know, we're very quick, aren't we, here recently to challenge the election results when someone wins that we didn't want to win. But when it's our own country where someone wins that we didn't want to win, you notice how silent media is, or how quick media is willing to label those who challenge the election results as some kind of a tinfoil hatters or conspiracy theorists or sit down and shut up, that sort of thing, right? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.